Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment, and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasage. Hello, and welcome to Bomsida. Today on the program, we'll hear about the fight against the harmonized sales tax in Ontario and British Columbia, where First Nation leadership are trying to maintain taxation rights. And last Monday, there was a cabinet shuffle in Ontario, and some First Nation leadership are disappointed that the Premier handed the Aboriginal portfolio to the Attorney General, leaving him with two portfolios to look after. So we'll hear from Association of Iroquois and Allied Indians Grand Chief Randa Phillips on that. And it's been just 1 year since Barack Obama became President of the United States, and while he campaigned, he made a lot of promises to the Native American community, and Indian Country Today journalist Rob Capriccioso will give us his analysis of the lukewarm year, and First Nation country artist Kimberly Dawn is about to release a new CD, so we'll hear from her and have a listen to a piece from her latest. But before we get to those stories, your national Aboriginal news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. First Nation communities in British Columbia and Ontario are rallying against the harmonized sales taxes in their provinces. In Ontario, the Anishinaabeg Nation has launched an anti-HST campaign to encourage its citizens to participate in community activities to protest the HST. Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi says it's more than just taxation. Meanwhile, on the West Coast, the Union of BC Chiefs have formed a committee, and Sync First Nation Chief Keith Matthew is a member of the committee. He says, although First Nations in BC and Ontario are both impacted, there are a few differences, and one includes a different set of tax laws. The harmonized sales tax is scheduled to be implemented in both provinces by July 1st of this year. Some First Nation leaders in Ontario feel Premier Dalton McGuinty's dropping the separate Minister of Aboriginal Affairs on Monday's cabinet shuffle is a step in the wrong direction. Ontario Attorney General Chris Bentley has been given the additional duty of Aboriginal Affairs. Association of Iroquois and Allied Indians Grand Chief Randall Phillips wonders how one minister can maintain the duties of two portfolios. A standalone ministry was created in June 2007 and was a key recommendation from the Ipperwash Inquiry. The Ipperwash Inquiry looked into the shooting death of Kettle and Stony Point First Nation protester Dudley George in 1995. He was killed by an OPP officer during the occupation of the park. There's been some good news for a First Nation community in Southern Ontario. The First Nation has received a land claim settlement offer from the federal government. The settlement includes 105 plus land in the town of Leamington to create an urban reserve. Louise Hillier is the chief of Caldwell First Nation, and she says community members will vote on the settlement agreement this spring. The agreement is currently being drafted by negotiators, and the federal government says the specific claim dates back to events from about 200 years ago. A study published in the Canadian Medical Journal revealed First Nation people were at a much higher risk of landing in the hospital with severe H1N1 infections compared to other people. The highest H1N1 rates happened in Manitoba, where 45 residents were hospitalized. Study authors also noted the higher rates in Aboriginal populations in Canada also occurred in Indigenous populations in New Zealand and Australia. A type 2 diabetic in Manitoba has to continue to pay for his insulin. According to the Winnipeg Free Press, the long-lasting Lantus insulin is paid for by the province under its healthcare plan, but not for 48-year-old Marvin Blackbird, who lives on the Kisikawinin First Nation. Because of his place of residency on reserve, he's covered under Healthcare Canada and not the province, and Health Canada doesn't pay for that particular prescription or not until the price is lowered. In order for Blackbird to have his prescription paid for, he would have to reside off reserve. The man has suffered diabetes complications, including the amputation of his right leg, and doctors say his kidneys could shut down if Blackbird quits taking his medication. Blackbird has not been successful in requesting an exam with Canada. It's been just over a year since U.S. President Obama has been inaugurated, and the Native American community has seen mixed blessings since Obama became president. Indian Country Today journalist Rob Capriccioso has been covering the Obama trail in Native American communities since he began his campaign to become the president. Capriccioso says the president has made some inroads in the Native American community. Capriccioso says President Obama made good on his word to resolve a major trust account lawsuit, and he also signed off on the Native American apology resolution. But, Capriccioso says, the president is worried about the apology, and he's still keeping quiet on the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. There's growing concern over the authenticity of Aboriginal art in Olympic venues. A number of artists want the Olympic Committee to remove the term authentic Aboriginal products from work not produced by Aboriginal people. Squamish artist Shane Jackson has started a petition to get them removed. However, Tawani Joseph of the Four Host First Nations Secretariat is happy with the exposure the Olympics are bringing to Aboriginal art. Meanwhile, a pair of Russian ice skaters are gathering criticism with their Aborigine-styled theme. The pair, Oksana Domina and Maxim Shabalin, plan to use an Aborigine-styled theme complete with ceremonial dance steps at the Winter Olympics. The dance will be complete with dark bodysuits and white tribal-style designs over their bodies and faces, plus leaves. 9MSN World News also reports a former Australian figure skater calls the dance clumsy, the costumes dreadful, and Aborigine elders say the couple's routine causes serious cultural offense. And that's your National Aboriginal News.
Lake of poison brown. That's when you'll see.
That was Money is the Goal from Sandy Schofield's CD, Nikowayaski. Sandy is a Métis Cree Soto artist composer based in Vancouver. The new harmonized sales tax legislation in Ontario and British Columbia is stirring up controversy in both provinces. First Nations in Ontario could lose their point of sale exemption on provincial sales tax. Tax exemption is a right in the treaties. The Anishinaabe Ontario launched its anti-HST campaign last Monday, and in BC, the Union of BC Chiefs have formed a committee. Bomsida attended Anishinaabe Nation's anti-HST launch, where Anishinaabe Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi unveiled the campaign, along with Deputy Grand Chief Glenn Hare and Ontario Regional Chief Angus Toulouse. Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi explains the campaign.
We're here to announce the launch of our new Facebook page. And a whole number of other activities that we plan on doing to demonstrate our concern and our opposition to the proposed harmonized sales tax. The harmonized sales tax will go into effect July 1st of 2010 and will combine the 8% provincial sales tax and the 5% GST for a total of 13 cents. Every dollar will be taxed on all goods and purchases that you purchase. And we've been vigorously opposing this, and I have categorically that the Supreme Court of Canada has said that governments are obligated to the duty to consult and accommodate. There's been a total failure of that duty to consult and accommodate our First Nations with the imposition of this harmonized sales tax. And I want to add that it's not just with First Nations people that they really failed to consult. I was listening to TVO hearings on the HST public hearings that were held in Queen's Park. And there was a fellow from the Owen Sound area traveled all the way on his own up to these hearings. And he made his presentation about his opposition and the impacts it would have on him as a farmer in that area and how it would hurt his family. And they took a rotation among the various parties about who would respond. And it happened to be the power, Liberal Party, the party in power that responded to this guy. And he said, "We live in a democracy and everyone has a right to their opinion. But frankly, we don't agree with your opinion. Thanks for coming. Have a good day." So, you know, it's not just us that, you know, they're not really paying attention to. So, you know, what really disturbs me is that, you know, when the Crown needed us as allies, you know, in order to come and occupy the territory, we were very prominent in the fact that they recognized us as nations. This belt, it signifies the Treaty of 1764 in Niagara that recognized the nations in this country. The fact that they would deal with us as nations. So we have a situation here where we find it very difficult, not only with that particular treaty, but with some of the treaties that are throughout our territory, that we have never agreed to be subject to the Crown. We've never been subject to conscription, we've never been subject to taxation. And we find that this harmonized sales tax is really much more than just taxation to us. It's really an exertion of their jurisdiction over us. It's part of the agenda of municipalizing our communities. It's part of the agenda of removing our inherent rights, the rights we have as recognized in the treaties. So I think it's very important that we realize that this is much bigger than just the fact that you're going to get zinc for 13 cents on every dollar coming July 1st. So that's why it's so crucial that we take every step possible to vigorously oppose this thing.
That was Anishinaabe Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi unveiling the anti-HST campaign. Ontario Regional Chief Angus Toulouse says a difference can be made with a high population of First Nation citizens coupled with technological tools like the internet.
In Ontario, we have over 200 and some thousand First Nation people. We have 132 First Nation communities that are part of Chiefs United. That's who we need to get to. That's who's going to move this whole issue forward in terms of making sure that we continue to have the point of sale exemption that we historically had. We need you and all those other 200 and some thousand people to stand up and become aware. And that's the challenge that we have, is this communication aspect, which is again why Benchi Badabi said we got to use whatever technology that we have. YouTube is one of those new technologies that the youth continue to remind leadership to say, hey, we're on these Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on everything and anything that's technology these days. And that's what the youth are saying. And it is the youth that really needs to understand how they're going to be impacted by this harmonized sales tax. And it is the youth that is going to really stand with us and make us strong once they become aware. And that's the challenge that the leadership has in 132 of our First Nation communities, to get that information to the citizens that are in the First Nation community, and also to our citizens that are in the urban areas, which is again, the friendship centers really do provide that kind of a avenue, that kind of a venue, so that we can share these kind of impacts that we're all gonna feel. And that's the biggest challenge that I see, is how do we ensure that people will become aware prior to July 1st. We need people to become aware now. And that's, again, what we've asked the leadership. Leadership has asked the Chiefs of Ontario, we need you to assist in coordinating and facilitating some of the information, some of the strategies, some of the what needs to be understood by our citizens in terms of how it's going to impact them and why.
That was Ontario Regional Chief Angus Talus, who spoke at the Anishinaabeg Nation's anti-HST campaign launch in North Bay on January 18th. Don't go away, Bombsida will be right back, and we'll hear from Sync Chief Keith Matthew on the harmonized sales tax issues in the province of BC. Welcome back to Bombsida. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasige. Just before the break, we were hearing about First Nation opposition to the harmonized sales tax in Ontario. Now we go to the province of BC, where the Union of BC Chiefs have organized a committee in opposition to the HST. Keith Matthew is the chief of Sync First Nation and sits on the HST committee. He explains what their issues are with the blended taxes.
Well, you know, we were quite busy just prior to Christmas, along with the Chiefs of Ontario. Mm-hmm. And we made presentations to the House Commons Finance Committee, along with the Chiefs of Ontario. And we were quite active in terms of, we also received an invitation to appear in front of the Senate committee doing the work on the HST. But really not much has happened because there's been, the Christmas break, but we are still active, and there's still time to do some work on that particular initiative because the implementation date and the enabling legislation, although it may be finished, the work would be in lobbying the provincial government here in British Columbia.
So it has passed legislation?
I believe so. Although I'd have to do some investigation into that, we've got staff from UBCIC who are actively working on this file for us.
Uh-huh.
But we're in quite a different situation here in British Columbia than the First Nations people in Ontario, and you know, just from history, look at the differences. The major one is that the First Nations of Ontario had the right or the taxation exemption at the point of sale right across the board in Ontario. We've never enjoyed that in British Columbia. It's always been restricted to reserve lands here in British Columbia. And there's also another difference that I think should be noted by any casual observer, and that's the fact that a lot of our communities here in British Columbia are in the real property tax field.
Right.
And that lends itself to work in other particular areas in terms of occupying the tax room of the First Nations GST and First Nations PST. So a lot of the communities here in BC who are in real property tax already occupy some of those taxation fields.
So, through the property
Real property tax?
Real property tax, that's right. You'll be charged HST on top of that?
No. We're exempted from that because it's on reserve lands. The area that we occupied, because in British Columbia, I'm not so sure in Ontario, but in British Columbia, the province, through provincial legislation, occupied the tax field in all areas, including reserve lands.
Uh-huh.
So if there was businesses on reserve that would be charging PST and GST on their goods and services, we already had agreements in place. Some of our communities had agreements in place to occupy those fields. And not all First Nations in British Columbia have real property tax. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's probably about under a quarter of the communities that occupy that area.
Okay. Well, the Anishinaabeg Nation earlier this week launched their anti-HST campaign and encouraging people to speak with their leaders and do some community activism. What are you guys doing?
Well, basically, we're hoping that we can still have meetings with our finance minister here in British Columbia.
Uh-huh.
And work on other exemptions to our community members, wherever they might live in the province. So we're continuing that work behind the scenes.
Okay, and when is that going to be law, or when is it going to be implemented?
I believe it's July the 1st,
okay.
2010. I'm not sure about that date in Ontario because they're separate agreements.
Mm-hmm. Ontario is July 1st as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And is there anything else you'd like to say or add on this issue?
Not at this point. You know, for us, I guess there's huge differences between the provincial governments and how they approach this issue with the respective First Nations in each of the provinces. And, you know, that should be noted. And I guess for us in British Columbia, we're not losing as much as the First Nations in Ontario. The First Nations in Ontario seem to be more negatively impacted than us here in British Columbia.
That was Sync First Nation Chief Keith Matthew, who sits on the Union of BC Chiefs HST Committee. Now here's Digging Roots with Strong and Beautiful from their CD, We Are.
They don't know you like I do. No, no. They don't see what you're going through. Oh, what you gotta do. Oh, just to get by. Well, they don't know. to bear well. No, sometimes the weight gets you heavy. But turn me on.
Obama has been the president of the U.S. for just over 1 year. His campaign was based on hope and change. Those slogans were something that sat right with voters in the Native American community. He made many promises. To tell us what's going on south of the border, Indian Country Today journalist Rob Capriccioso gives us his observations of the year.
I think, Jennifer, well, thanks for having me on, first of all. But it's been really an interesting year, and hopes were very high when President Obama came into power last year for Native America because they've been ignored for so long. So, of course, with high hopes comes the possibility that you can be let down. And if he had ignored Native Americans after having made so many pledges on his campaign trail to pay attention to our issues, I think that it would have not been quite a positive experience. But we are seeing at the end of the year that he has done some positive moves. In December, his Justice Department and Interior Department moved to settle the Cobell litigation, which had been going on since the mid-90s, where a bunch of Native Americans, hundreds of thousands of Native Americans, had a class action lawsuit against the federal government for mismanaged resources that the Interior Department held into trust for them. So this had gone through the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, the long 8 years there, where no moves from the federal government to actually settle were seriously talked about. So by the end of his first year in December, they put a $3.4 billion offer on the table, signed off by the Justice Department. Now, so a lot of Native Americans were happy that he did that. At the same time, many wish it were a much higher number. The Indian plaintiffs in that case had said at one point that they estimated their damages to be around $57 billion. So $3.4 billion is a much smaller number than many hoped for. So at the same time, when there's progress on some issues, there are going to be people who have been let down. They think, well, the federal government is cheating us out of us. And some of that blame gets put on Obama. But so that's kind of where we're at. That's a good overview in that he's made some moves, but many people see it as not being enough at this point.
And also, last month what happened, too, was his apology.
Right. He signed, what has happened, Congress has had an apology resolution before it since 2004, and Congress hadn't passed that until 2008, the Senate side of Congress. The House of Representatives didn't move on it. But then in 2009, the end of the year, in the fall, the Senate passed it, the House passed it in December,
and then the president signed off on it on December 19th. And the funny thing was, you know, I'm based in Washington for Indian Country Today, so I hear a lot of the stuff going on. Nobody knew about him signing the apology resolution. The White House didn't put out any press releases. The people involved didn't, you know, make a statement. He never said, I'm going to make visit a tribe and make this apology out loud. So I started asking the White House, you know, in January when we came back from the holidays, you know, he signed this on December 19th. But we aren't hearing any. And the White House hasn't said that there's going to be an official out loud apology. So people, again, are left like, well, it's great he signed this, but if you make an apology in a vacuum, nobody hears it. A lot of people don't understand how that translates to real positive action. And if an apology is meant to be healing, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And like in Canada, Prime Minister Stephen Harper made his apology, and that got huge coverage, you know, from all sorts of media and national television as well.
Yeah, that's fresh on the minds, too, of many Native Americans who saw that 2008 apology with the Prime Minister. And so many First Nations folks said afterwards, you know, it was covered here in the States as well, that they did feel that by him making such a big deal of it, that they weren't, you know, the sins of the past are always going to be there, but they did feel a sense of healing. So that the White House hasn't moved to do something more public yet has people like, well, what was the point of signing this if you're not going to even mention that you signed
it? It's not going to come out of your mouth.
Right.
And same with Australia. They made their apology to the Aborigine people there as well.
Yep, and that happened in 2008 too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was a significant year.
Big year. So it's good that these things are happening, that President Obama, at least someone in his administration, is having him do these good things, but he can be, he could do better. And the expectations are really high. So you will see some Native Americans being very critical of him, especially because he did court tribal leaders and tribal citizens during his campaign in 2008. He really wanted their vote. So he made some promises, and expectations are really high there.
That was Rob Capriccioso, a journalist with Indian Country Today, and he's based in Washington. Don't go away. Bob said I will be right back with the latest from country artist Kimberly Dawn. Welcome back to Bom Sida. Country artist Kimberly Dawn is just releasing her third CD. It's been 5 years since the last one, and something she's very proud of. Kimberly spoke with Bom Sida about her new CD and her favorite song, which is also the name of the CD, Built That Way. Well, I'll let Kimberly tell you all about it.
I am so excited. I have not been able to play in the sandbox for almost 5 years. And I'm finally releasing a brand new album called Built That Way. And what I'm so excited about with this album is that there are so many fantastic writers on here that basically I'm just the voice. They've put their heart and soul into this album, and I've got some really good songs that I think everybody's going to be really excited to hear. It's going to be a totally different sound from what the original three albums that I have done is going to sound like. So it's going to be really cool.
So when you're saying it's a little bit different than the previous ones, like how different are they? What does that mean?
What I was lacking in a live show was I had Lily, which had some cover tunes. Then I had I'm Going Home, which garnered several awards. It had a sense of Aboriginal touch to it with the songs mentoring Mother Earth. And did very, very well. Then we did Healing Jane, which was very Aboriginal-oriented towards the survivors. And it's a very big survivor album that is for our First Nations people. This album is more rock and more country and straight across the board. With the writers of Doc Walker, Rafe St. Germain, rocker Crisper Gaffney, and then Billy Simard, this is a totally different flavor than what you've heard before. But what it's going to do is it's going to bring excitement to the stage show that we have.
Okay, and how did you get hooked up with these writers?
You know what? I'm very, very lucky to say It's kind of weird. I grew up with Chris Thorsingson from Doc Walker. Him and I grew up in a little town of Westburn, Manitoba, very, very small community. He actually lived in my grandma's backyard.
Oh, wow.
We lived less than 100 yards away, and we actually had our first band together because my brother and sister, and then his sister, we would all get together, and we made up a band, and we would play as children from the ages of, like, 10 until we were, like, 14. So this is what we did on weekends. Then I had the opportunity of meeting Ray St. Germain in an on-air interview in Winnipeg as he was on. He has a show that he runs Métis Music from. And I got to meet him, very excited. I mean, the legendary Ray St. Germain. And him and I have established a relationship. And it's almost like I'm a part of his family. And I get along with his kids and just established a great relationship with him. And he's actually one of my mentors, one of my guides in this music industry. And then you remember him from the Pumps. And he was also in another great rock and roll band in the 70s. I got hooked up through some friends. Eagle and Hawk have recorded albums with him before. And Little Hawk has also had, award-winning Juno-nominated albums through Chris Bergafni. So we got together, and he actually wrote a couple of songs just from meeting me on the fly. So that's the relationship between me and the writers. And it's really going to be kind of cool when you see how they've all been put together onto one album.
Awesome. So you're telling me about one of your favorite songs.
Yeah. I was heading out to a family reunion, and I stopped by Chris Thorsingson, who still lives in our hometown of Westburn, Manitoba, when he's not touring. And we sat down at the kitchen table, and we were talking, kind of going back and forth about old times. And he started looking at some music on his computer, and he pulled up about six different songs. And one of the songs was called Built That Way. And when I first initially listened to it, it was written by the guys, Dave and Chris, from Doc Walker. So it was really kind of almost a man-geared song. And when we stepped into the studio with it, they were kind of saying, oh, well, this is for the guys. And I said, no, this is exactly about the girls and the way girls are today. And if you know me, this is kind of who I am, and was really excited to record Built That Way because it just kind of says, you know, everything that about me that, people have always said I talk too much. People have always said I'm too loud. People have always said I'm too boisterous. And now what ends up happening is they're paying me for it. So I'm just built that way. And, this is who I am. I'm never going to change. And finally, at the age of 39, I can actually say I'm proud of who I am. I'm built this way, and I ain't going to change. And that's what the song tells. And you're going to see that with the music. It's awesome.
Oh, awesome. And how is your album doing right now, by the way?
It's doing actually really well. We haven't even, it's on iTunes right now. So you can download it. So you can go to iTunes and punch in Kimberly Dawn Built That Way. The initial album has not been released to stores, but I'm very excited to say that last November I signed with Awesome EMI Canada, and we are going to be distributed throughout Walmart and CD Plus. And the response already just online has been phenomenal. The first run's been sold out.
Awesome. Well, congratulations.
I know. I'm really so excited because I don't like to call them fans. I like to call them friends. I think everybody who's heard the music before is really pumped about this new album because of the writers and because of the spunk that it's going to bring to the set when you get to see it all put together. The show is going to be immaculate.
Wow. Well, I look forward to that. And Kimberly, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Well, thanks for, getting a hold of me, and I'm so glad that you're playing the music. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. I'm so proud of this album, and, I can't wait for the audiences to hear it in the masses. It's going to be great.
That was rock and country artist Kimberly Dawn, and here's the song she's been talking about, Built That Way.
People tell me that I drink too much, smoke too much, live on the edge. Wonder I'm not dead. I cross every line that's drawn, break my head on every wall. I'm awake,
What can I say? Tell me, baby, well, I ain't gonna change. My blood just runs one way. Strong as it takes, just red in my veins. What you see is what you're gonna get. I won't change my stripes. Don't even want to try. There's no reason to explain. I'm just built that way. My baby knows when I'm out at night with the boys that I'll be home soon. Got things to do. Like pull the blankets off the bed, lay them on the porch instead. Make love all night, watch the sunrise. Don't you worry, no, I ain't gonna break. I just love that way. Strong as it takes, just red in my veins. What you see is what you're gonna get.
Let's hear one more song. This is Devil Come Down Sunday from Derek Miller's latest CD, The Dirty Looks.
Devil came. came down Sunday, offered me a ride.
You've been listening to Bombsidaw with Jennifer Ashwasige. Bombsidaw is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment, and a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bombsidaw means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project 1.